up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about testing out and finding small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. If you're interested in reaching out or helping out, check out the links in the description of each episode to access our email, Twitter, website, and YouTube channel. But enough about the show. Let's get into our next game. The game for this week's episode. Braid is a 2D action platform puzzle game, and comparing it to some games we've talked about before, a lot of similarities with Hue, which is a game we did a couple weeks back, Celeste, Super Meat Boy, and PID. The original game, released in August of 2008 via the Xbox Live Arcade service on 360, and then in 2009 it came to PC, Mac, and PS3. But the version we're talking about today is the Anniversary Edition, which recently came out in May of 2024, and that released on PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Series X and S, PC, and mobile. And I believe the mobile versions were actually published by Netflix. The game was developed by Number None, which is the original studio, I believe, consisting of Jonathan Blow and a couple other people. But the Anniversary Edition is developed by Thecla Inc., which I think is Jonathan Blow's newer studio that he started. So I think they just kind of picked up and remastered this game. And Jonathan Blow is US-based. I believe he's out of Colorado, and he has a small team now. I'm not sure what size. The game was published by the studio itself. So this is self-published originally, as well as the Anniversary Edition, although the mobile versions are published by Netflix. So shout out to Small Team, self-publishing. The game did have a physical release in 2010, the original game, on PC, and that was a retail version, I believe, out everywhere, and that was done by Mumbo Jumbo. Never heard of them, but very kind of niche release there, and you can definitely check that out. I saw copies of that floating around on eBay. So this Anniversary Edition that recently released has sort of a bunch of new levels, kind of a new art, or at least they combed through all the art and remastered a lot of it. And it also has a lot of commentary hours from some of the developers, especially Jonathan Blow. So a lot of new goodies in this Anniversary Edition. The game is having a vinyl release through Laced Records, and pre-orders are available for that now, and that's going to release or ship, I believe, in September, so this fall of 2024. The game released with an MSRP, I believe, the original version, of $9.95. This was very tough to find, but I did see this kind of in price charting listed on the store for Steam. But the Anniversary Edition that just released, that is at an MSRP of $19.99. And the vinyl release that's coming soon, that is available for pre-order for $38. Runtime of the game, if you're running straight through, just kind of getting through the levels, not worrying about extras or anything like that, you could easily get this done in about 5 hours. But if you're trying to get everything in this game, it could take you over 10, maybe closer to 15 hours. And the game does have a platinum trophy for our PlayStation listeners, at least the Anniversary Edition does, and it's sitting at about 3% of players got that. There's one trophy that seems a little tough. I think it's like a speedrun trophy, but other than that, they should all be pretty straightforward. So me, I bought this on PlayStation for $14.99, and originally I got the PS5 version, and I wanted to get it so that I or my wife could play this on her PS4. So I bought it, and then I went over to her PS4, and then I looked to try and download it through my account, and it wasn't there. So I don't think this game is cross-buy. So what I did is I actually returned the PS5 version, and I've been playing the PS4 version on my PS5, and then I'm also able to download it on my PS4. So I tried to look this up. I didn't see anything anywhere that said it wasn't cross-buy. Some people are saying to like refresh your licenses and it'll pop up on the PS4. But as far as I can tell, buying the PS5 version does not give you the PS4 version. So definitely keep that in mind. I put in a little more than 4 hours, going close to five. I'm being super thorough, but I'm actually getting through it pretty quickly. There are six worlds, and I think I just finished the fifth one, and I've gotten all of the extras or the puzzle pieces in all of those other worlds, so I am kind of flying through this game. In terms of recommendation, the name kind of sounded familiar. I don't know if back from when I used to watch things on IGN, the name Braid kind of stood out to me. I did play a little bit of The Witness, which is Jonathan Blow's other game, although he has many more than that. But also recently, he appeared on Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast, for an interview with Colin Moriarty. So I did hear about him kind of through there. Interestingly enough, when I had heard about the fact that it was getting a remaster of the game, I did see it on the front page of the PSN storefront. So that space is pretty valuable, and it definitely gets your game seen. Unfortunately, they can only fit so many on the first page there. So that is part of why I decided to check it out and dive in. Let's talk gameplay for Braid Anniversary Edition. So this is a 2D platform puzzler, so a lot of basics are going to apply. So you're going to be moving left to right, side to side with your joystick, and you're going to jump. So you're going to be moving and jumping. What's really nice about the jump is there is kind of push sensitivity because you can dictate how high you want to jump. And also when you bounce off of something, if you hit the button at the right time and then hold it, I think you actually get higher in the air. And then other than that, you're going to see prompts to interact with different objects. And so you press the button when that comes up. And that's pretty much going to cover the basics of what you're doing. How you progress in this game is going to be a major thing here because, like I said, there's going to be six worlds, and you're going to have sort of a hub when you jump into the game. And these different worlds are almost like rooms in a house that you jump into, a little bit like Super Mario 64, I guess, but from a 2D perspective. And each of these worlds are going to have somewhere around five levels within them to progress through. Some of them might have a little more, maybe six. When you go into the world, you're going to go into a separate room, and then you're going to have a sequence of doors that you can access. And these are going to be the different levels. Now, the thing about the levels in a world is that they unlock sequentially. So you'll have to beat the first one, and then you can go on to the next one right away, and then you can pop out at any time. Once you're in a level, it's basically going to be a 2D platforming puzzle. And the basic goal is to traverse the level to get to the opposite end where there is another door. So you'll come in a door trying to find your way to the exit door, essentially. At any point, you can go in either of the doors and it'll go to the next level or the previous level. And then while you're in these levels within a world, one of the major things, even though it's optional, is there's going to be a collecting of these puzzle pieces. And they're going to be scattered across some of the levels. Some of them might have two, some of them might have three. And you'll see a little box in the top left that tells you how many puzzle pieces there are in that level and how many of them you've gotten. And these puzzle pieces are going to accrue within one entire world. And each world is going to have 12 puzzle pieces for you to collect to build a puzzle that has a picture on it. This is really going to be the source of sort of the tough or the challenge that goes on in this game, and really the innovation in terms of the platforming and how to get to certain things and solve certain puzzles. But again, it is kind of optional, I think. I don't know at what point you do have to collect the pieces to access sort of like a final thing. I'm not finished the game, but at least for now, it seems like this is really optional to collect all of these. And there's also going to be sort of this story or art synergy with the puzzles, because you are putting together a picture that might depict something that's also backed up in sort of the lore, the story. So let's talk about the platforming. So this is 2D platforming, so there are definitely going to be some basic tropes here. You're going to have ladders that you climb. There'll be moving platforms. There'll be sort of these lattices in the background that mean that you can kind of climb at any point on them, almost like Super Mario World. You're going to have a lot of timing puzzles. You're going to have locked doors that might require timing to access them. You're going to have keys that unlock doors that you have to go pick up. Definitely a lot of puzzles that'll ensue there. And you'll have hazards. You'll have pits that fall all the way down, some that'll fall on spikes. And then you'll have projectiles that might be shot at you, and if you get hit by them, you die. Enemies are actually going to be a pretty major part of the platforming. So the majority of these enemies are going to be like these Goomba-like things that are just like a face in a round ball. And they're going to be patrolling back and forth on a platform, and they'll go to the edge and then they'll turn around for the most part. Some levels they might be doing something different. But these are going to be interesting because primarily you're going to use them to jump on and boost yourself up and maybe reach a higher platform. So that's one of the major ways that you're going to be able to get to higher places, because you do have a limit on how high you can normally jump. But they're going to be involved in other kind of puzzles, because something else they can do is they can actually pick up door keys in their patrol and hold them. And if they are walking in their patrol to the door that has a lock on it and they have the key, they will actually open the door themselves. So this is going to be sort of an interesting way to solve some of the puzzles here. You're also going to come across these spawn cannons that are going to consistently shoot things, and sometimes they're going to shoot enemies out and add them to the level. Sometimes they'll be shooting out hazards or projectiles that'll hit you, and other times they'll actually be shooting out moving platforms, sort of this like constant chaos or adding to the level. But the major, major factor when it comes to the platforming and the puzzling here is that there is a time rewind mechanic. So at any time, you can press a button and rewind to however far back you want. And you can go as far back as the beginning of you walking through the door of the level. So you can really kind of reset on your own. There's no real like restart level. You can just kind of rewind as far back as you can. And you can speed up the rewind. So if you're, you know, really not happy with how it's been going, you can hit the rewind button and then speed it up with L or R or whatever, and then you'll quickly go back. I think the fastest speed it can go is like 8 times. It really is a nice convenience if you're trying to go back pretty far. But this is going to be a big thing, because this is going to be how you alleviate whether you died in a level or whether you got hit by an enemy or hit by a projectile. There's no like reset to the level, or there's no like game over screen. You just have to rewind. And when you get hit by something, like the game will stop because you can't go any further. So it's like kind of asking you, hey, you need to rewind and not have that happen again. And anytime that you touch an enemy, anytime it's like walking into you, you're gonna die. Anytime you fall into a spike pit or a regular pit, you're gonna die. And anytime you get hit by a projectile, you will also die. So you're gonna need to rewind from that. What's really interesting is that when you use the rewind mechanic, you and everything else in the level will rewind. So if you didn't jump as far as you wanted to, or you didn't hit the enemy at the right height and get to the higher platform, you just rewind, and then the game will go back to how far you rewind and kind of replay out what was going on. So you can choose to do it differently, you can choose to retime your jump, whatever you need to do. But this is really quick and really efficient. It reminds me a lot of Hotline Miami. Not that it resets the room, but that like as soon as you rewind and release the rewind button, it just replays right away. So there's really no hiccups here. And I think this is a really impressive feature to make it snap so quickly, especially because you can speed up the rewind. Once you get used to this, like you're going to use this constantly. And it, I think, is really fresh and something different, something that I haven't really seen, at least that snaps so quickly and efficiently. And this will go along with if you like kill an enemy and you didn't mean to, you can quickly rewind. If you unlocked a door in a sequence that you didn't like, you can rewind it. Everything will apply here that you do. And what's interesting is this seems like an accessibility feature, but really this is going to lead to some pretty advanced puzzling. So there are going to be some unique levels that you're going to come across. Like one in particular that I can think of is instead of using the rewind mechanic, although you can, your movement is actually going to dictate whether the speed of everything else is going forwards or backwards. So whenever you move to the right, everything progresses. Whenever you move to the left, it rewinds. This is really going to pose some crazy challenges because you're going to have things that are very meticulous in terms of the timing and when you're able to access them, whether it's enemies moving in a certain pattern and you being able to use them to jump. All kinds of things are going to be at play here. Something that you'll realize early on is there are going to start to be some special glows to certain things. When something has one of these special glows, depending on the color, it might move outside of your time rewind. So this is interesting because anything can be coded in this glow. It can be enemies, it can be different hazards that are being shot out, different platforms that are moving, keys, doors, anything can be coded in this glow. And basically what it means is if you rewind it, that thing is not going to be part of it. So it's going to keep moving at its own speed. And so this is going to have some interesting exhibitions because, for example, if you have to go and retrieve a key and go and get it and unlock this door before something blocks the door, you might have to run up and do a bunch of platforming. But if that key is coded in this glow, what can happen is you can go and get the key and then rewind to when you were back next to the door. And if the key is coded in that glow, you will keep the key despite you rewinding everything else because it's outside of the time rewind. So there are a lot of things like that that are really interesting, a lot of examples of this. You're definitely going to come across a lot of these key and door logic puzzles. So for example, if some keys are not coded, that means that you can rewind them after using them and then go back to before they were used. But if a door is coded, then what you can do is use a key on a door that is coded and that door will remain unlocked despite you rewinding the time. And if you need a second key, now all of a sudden that key that you used after you rewind is back in your hand, but the door is unlocked that was in front of you. So little logical puzzles like that, especially with doors and keys, are really going to get you. And it's really interesting how many times this simple mechanic of like a door and a key or multiple doors or multiple keys can actually be new and fresh each time and challenging. Eventually, you'll get a slowdown mechanic where you can put something in a certain area and slow down what's going on in that area. Using enemies, like I said, to unlock or carry keys, that's going to be a major thing. And if you happen to have hazards that could also damage the enemies, you might have levels where you're like escorting an enemy or guiding them or making sure that they don't get hit and that they progress to where you need them to drop off the key or open the door. Really just the synergy that is going to go on when you start to see some of these advanced levels using existing mechanics, but then throwing something else in. And some levels you're going to really need to rely on the time rewind, some that you might not. And so it's interesting, after you've had a bunch of levels where you had to do time rewind mechanics and really master that, when you get to a level where you don't need it, it's almost like you have to constantly be thinking inside and outside the box back and forth. And this is really going to lead into the pacing of the game and how it's structured. So I'd say in like the first world, it's really slowly adding different challenges or different mechanics and slowly introducing you to the complexity of the time rewind. But once you get onto the second world and then the third, you really start to get access to those unique levels like I talked about before. But I will say the logic of this game is going to stay consistent when you see something and how it will apply to something different that you've never seen it apply to. It really just takes you turning your head on its side and thinking like, okay, I know how this mechanic works, but how will it work with this item or with this enemy or with this projectile now? What I will say in terms of the pacing, and it might frustrate you initially if you're plopped into one of these puzzles, everything can be solved right away with what you have. So you might come across something and like, oh, I can't access that now. I'll come back later. I'm telling you that everything can be solved right away. There's no like, oh, I got to a level and it's like Metroidvania. I'm going to need a certain power before I can get that. Everything can be solved with the logic that is right in front of you. So if you sit there and kind of ponder and look at it or mess around with it a bunch of times, you will solve it. And I did have a bunch of levels where I kind of stared at it for maybe 5 minutes or so, or just like walked around back and forth and tried different things or messed around. Again, I always was able to solve it. And in terms of accessibility, like I said, the puzzle pieces, this is really where the challenge comes from. This is where the tough, synergistic, logical puzzles are going to come from. And to progress in this game, you don't need to get these. I think for the completionists that are listening to this, you're definitely going to want to. And I've certainly done that. I haven't moved on to a new world unless I got all the puzzle pieces in the previous one. Again, this is possible. So don't look at a level and think like, oh, there's no way I can solve this now, or I must need something. There's no double jump that's coming. There's no ledge grab or anything like that. Everything is solvable as you see it. What's also really nice is at any point you can leave the level, and you can also leave the world at any time and go on to any of the hub screens or anything like that. What's really nice is if you collect a puzzle piece in a level and then you leave the level, you keep the puzzle piece. Although there are certain levels where if you rewind before you got the puzzle piece, you won't have it. So just be aware of that. But I just like the accessibility of being able to jump out to the hub at any time. And as long as you open a door at the end of a level into a new level, you now have access to that new level. So then you can go back to the hub world and look at the world screen that has the different doors for the levels and then go back into any one of those levels at any time. The game does save, I think, automatically. I haven't quit while I was in a level, so I don't advise that. But I know that if you're at the hub world or the room that has the different levels within a world, you can definitely quit and then it'll pop you back and save all your progress. A lot of accessibility there, but other than that, the game is fairly simple and it's filled with a lot of logical puzzles that you can kind of solve at your own pace or even choose not to do and just kind of complete the level. Let's talk about the vibe of Braid Anniversary Edition, and let's start with the visuals. And again, we're going to focus on the Anniversary Edition. I have not played the original game. From this Anniversary Edition, it is visually stunning, absolutely stunning. There are bright colors, and yet there's this soften that goes across, like this haziness or this like softening of these colors, and it makes it really kind of wispy. A lot of the scenarios, a lot of the backgrounds that you're going to see, it reminds me a lot of like Thomas Kincaid photos and scenes and backgrounds. You're definitely going to see a lot of meadows and fields and blue skies with clouds kind of hanging and not really like overcast or anything like that, but just bright, cheery. It's just going to have levels that are full of light. They're very sunny, a lot of storybook vibes. And this is also going to be a component of the different puzzle pieces that you get because you are going to construct a puzzle. A lot of these are very beautiful scenes, kind of look like they're painted in watercolors. But there are other types of levels, like you will be in sort of caves or mines or things like that, still very well lit. Like even if it's like a dark and dank inside of a cave or something like that, it never felt like the lighting was too dark or like it was too eerie or anything like that. It's very well lit and everything is sort of very well defined. And this is also something that you see in the outline contrast, comparing like the foreground and the background. Anything in the foreground, whether it's the scenery, whether it's characters, you, enemies, projectiles, things like that, these are very strongly outlined in black. Like you can definitely see their definition. But when you look at the background, like whether it's the sun or the clouds or trees or anything like that, you can tell that they're more far away. They're not outlined, so they look a bit more blended or a bit softer. So I like that contrast, and it's really helping you understand whether something is in the foreground that you have to worry about. Obviously, if it's moving, it's something that you have to be concerned about. But if it's an obstacle to you, it'll be fairly obvious because it's more defined. And this is especially going to ring true for things like the doors and the keys that you see. They're going to be this shiny, metallic, very defined, especially the doors and the locks on the doors. Just very defined and very contrasting to things way in the background. But also enemies. Like I said, there are these sort of like walking balls that almost look like porcupines, like they have, I don't know, heads of hair, and they're just a face. So these can be a little alarming at first, but you'll definitely get used to them. Again, very detailed, very outlined, like the features on them, the nose, the eyes, as well as if you come across like wood grain of like a bridge or something, or rock, like if you're in a cave or cavern or mines or something like that. And then you have your character. You're this tiny man in a suit, and you have a tie, and your face are just constantly moving. Like when you move your character, the tie swings one way or another. Anytime you move, like the facial expressions of your guy, they change so quickly and they're so animated anytime he's moving. But what I like is you have this little tiny man in a suit. He's this pale little Irish skin type guy, and he's got these rosy cheeks, like he's always out of breath or he's winded. It adds such character to what you're looking at and the character that you're using to interact with. In terms of audio, the music in this game is beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. It's well orchestrated. It's very Celtic. It gives you like this Celtic vibe. Again, maybe that's linked with the guy. He looks like this little Irishman with these rosy cheeks. But the music is unbelievable. You've got all kinds of strings, maybe even a harp at times. You've got woodwinds, some piano at times. And the music is just very cheery, very uplifting. It's almost like you're frolicking in a meadow, always feeling positive and lighthearted. And it's really something that contributes to how you feel when you're playing the game. Like you're always coming in and you've got this scene that is breathtaking and these bright lights, but not like over the top. And then you've got this cheery music. It's like you're in this kind of fantasy storybook land and everything seems to be okay. And it just really puts a positive spin on your mentality while you're playing this game. And in terms of themes and lore, when you go to a new world, you're going to read kind of story clips in these little books. And the story readings, I don't know how they relate to what you're doing. A lot of what you're reading is about this man who's, I guess, going through like separation, whether it's with his wife or whoever. And it's really leaning on sort of this fairy tale metaphor where like this person is trying to save a princess or get her back and she was stolen or she ran away or something like that. And this can really get super heavy at times, like some kind of internal regret, or this person regrets something they did, or they feel justified and they're angry about why this person's not here. I don't know what kind of personal touch this has from the developers or anything like that, but this does get a little heavy. I'm unsure where the tale is going. I guess you are this guy who's trying to look for this princess or whatever, because at the end of a lot of these worlds, you will come across this character who says, like, the princess is in another castle, which is a nice ode to Mario. But since your character never really talks, I don't know how loosely the metaphor goes to the things that you're seeing or the enemies or things like that, as well as the puzzle paintings. I'm not sure if these are depicting scenes of like things that happened. A lot of them are just like there's a party and oh, this scene is happening, or someone's lying in bed or something like that. I'm not sure if 100%ing the game with all the puzzles will unlock something that'll more overtly connect all of these things, but it seems like there's some vague connection. I just don't get the sense that the feel of what you're reading is really connecting with what you're seeing in terms of the gameplay, in terms of the enemies. But I could be wrong. I'm just not seeing all of that. But from the gameplay, you're definitely seeing some themes of time, obviously, rewinding time. I don't know if maybe that's linked to regret that this character has, how they want to rewind time and like change something they did. Definitely a lot of doors with locks, finding keys to things. That could be some kind of metaphor there. But overall, while I was playing this, I wasn't really feeling the connection to what I was reading. I was just kind of focused on the gameplay. But I think if you dive in, there could be something that makes a lot of sense and makes a lot of connections to the things that you're doing with the things that you're reading. right, let's wrap up the conversation about Braid, the Anniversary Edition. So this game is absolutely stunning. The colors that you see, the art style, sort of this wispy meadows, the environments that you're seeing, a little bit of like Thomas Kincaid, but not over the top. You're definitely seeing a lot more sky. But when you come in and you're seeing this and you're hearing the soundtrack, you just feel lighthearted. You feel cheery. You feel like, you know, there's no stress. And maybe that is intentional with what the game is trying to convey that the character needs to see. But it's something that while you're playing it, you really feel like kind of lighter and you feel like this is the environment or these are the feelings that you want to have. So sort of this wispiness and this cheeriness. Love the time mechanics. I think they're amazing. I love the synergy that goes on with a lot of these simple logical challenges. Again, sometimes it requires you thinking outside the box, but then sometimes you have to go back inside the box. Things that you might be overthinking can definitely come out and get you. I like that some of these have multiple solutions, I feel, or at least some ways to kind of get away with moving forward, whether it's like wanting to jump near an enemy but not hit them. That's definitely something that I think the sliver of lines between like this can't happen versus this might be able to happen. You can definitely get away with maybe solving some of these things in other ways. But a lot of this is going to be logic mind benders. And I think that's the strength of the game, although maybe not everyone's going to be into that. In terms of value, I think $20 is tough for an MSRP. I know this is a remaster, but I think this fits better at $15 in terms of just the raw price. And I would really look for this on sale, maybe under $15, maybe $12, I think is a really solid price point for this game. I know this is a well-revered classic, but I do think that platform puzzling that doesn't have a lot of like role-playing elements, because everything has role-playing elements, I think that it's becoming maybe more of a niche. Not everybody is really about that, but also, you know, alongside that, I think there's a lot more competition, which is a little counterintuitive, but there are a lot of games like this out there that I think do puzzle challenges really well in innovative ways. So I think it might be a little tough to come out of the gate with $20 for this. But overall, I feel like there's a really great challenge aspect to this game and a really great experience and a feeling while you're playing this game. But I think that you can definitely find what you're looking for and focus on that in this game, because it brings a lot of different aspects and it doesn't force you to focus on any one of them in particular. So I do recommend this game for anybody that's interested in anything that we talked about. Overall, I will say the selling point is that this is a well-crafted, high-quality experience, and so I think you should give it a shot. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.